Hi, and thanks all for coming and staying for this late afternoon session. Appreciate your attendance. I'm going to be talking about a little bit different, but somewhat related to this discussion here on hooking up, with this ambiguity around this term of hooking up. And I think that fleshing out what different terminology means to young people is really important, and that's something that I'm looking to do with some of my research related to consent. So today I'm talking about a behavioral measure of consent at last events. It's actually a dual measure of consent, and I'll explain why I ended up going with a dual measure approach. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So why am I talking about consent when it comes to adolescent sexuality? And it stems from a discussion about sexual assault. We know that sexual assault remains a salient public health issue. We know there's high rates of lifetime sexual assault, lifetime rates for women who have experienced sexual assault. We know that in most cases, the perpetrator is known to the victim prior to the assault. So this demonstrates that perhaps there's some level of trust involved in which there may or may not be a miscommunication. There may or may not be sort of rape culture that dictates how we communicate our consent, which could contribute to these high rates. We also here at APHA would care about experiencing sexual assault because it's linked empirically to diminished physical, mental, and sexual health outcomes. We know that consent is a primary means, consent promotion is a primary means of sexual assault prevention education initiatives, and that's something that Sonia and I talked about yesterday in another discussion, that consent promotion is part of sexual assault prevention education. But when you actually look at literature on consent, the sort of definition of consent is confusing. It's really absent from a lot of literature. The research on consent is quite limited, yet we define sexual assault primarily in terms of consent. Often sexual assault is defined as non-consensual sexual activity. But when you look at research examining consent, it's really quite limited. There's only really three studies that examine how college students consent to sexual activity, one being something that I've looked at, and then two from the 90s that have looked at sort of consent in fictitious situations rather than what people are actually doing to consent to sex. So with this limited information, the effectiveness of sexual assault prevention education initiatives that hinge on consent promotion seems a little bit questionable. In turning to the literature, there's been a number of ways that consent has been theorized. One way, in a report in the 1995-96 CECAS report, a researcher, Charlene Mollenhard at University of Kansas, raised some questions about consent, asking what it means to consent, how is consent conceptualized, and she sort of theorized that consent could be defined in two specific ways. One is a mental act, meaning how you think or feel regarding your decision to engage in sex, so the feelings that are involved in your agreement to engage in sex, and then one is a verbal or behavioral act, which I think is how people tend to think about consent, something that you're communicating, so how I might express either verbally or non-verbally through behaviors or words to indicate my willingness to engage in sexual activity. And to some extent, separately, these conceptualizations may not provide a comprehensive understanding of consent. So what's missing is sort of conceptual clarity on this issue of consent, as well as some measurement tools surrounding consent. There's one other consent scale, the sexual consent scale, which really looks at students' attitudes towards consent, but there's really nothing that discusses what people are doing sort of behaviorally or how they're feeling about consent. And so the purpose of my research was to develop measures to accurately assess how people sort of internally feel, that sort of first conceptualization that Charlene Mollenhard had described, your feelings regarding your willingness to engage in sexual activity, and then how you might externally communicate that either verbally or non-verbally. So I'll be referring to terms internal consent and external consent for just to say that's the definitions or the terminology I've sort of applied. And I think it's important to do this in regard to college students because we're seeing such high rates of sexual assault and repeat victimization, and hopefully understanding consent within this population might lead to more effective prevention mechanisms, particularly when we think about the fact that a lot of assault prevention initiatives focus on promoting consent. So the purpose of, again, the study was to develop a clear understanding of how college students define consent and to articulate these constructs for the development of two measures, an internal consent scale, which again is that those feelings that we have that sort of dictate our decisions to engage in sexual activity, and then the external consent scale, which is how we might express that sort of behaviorally or verbally. And I used the systematic process for developing these measures, and we'll discuss the assessment of the psychometric properties of these measures throughout the rest of my talk here. So this study occurred over multiple phases. First phase was an item elicitation of both the internal and external consent measures. So I basically handed out open-ended questionnaires to college students. There was about 200 students who received open-ended questionnaires that really elicited language that they used to describe consent, and then specifically how they described their feelings associated with consent and what feelings were, we elicited various feelings, as well as behavioral or verbal ways in which college students expressed consent. So these responses were coded by myself and a team of three other researchers, and that fed into how we began the item writing stage. After some initial items were written, they were reviewed by a leading team of experts and revised through several iterations, which are not representative by those two arrows. There were several rounds of revisions going on with my team of experts. And then those fed into a quantitative measure, which included items associated with the internal consent scale and then items associated with external consent, and those were administered as part of a larger quantitative survey, and then those the results there were analyzed and resulted in reduction, there I can't say the word, that resulted in the finalized internal and external consent scales. As I mentioned, in the two waves of data collection, the open-ended survey in the first wave included an elicitation of internal consent items as well as external consent items and a number of other questions that were related to consent to specific behavior and consent and wantedness. And then the quantitative survey, which is where the data I'll be talking about specifically in the next couple of slides, came from the second wave of data that include demographic items as well as some behavioral items and then several scales, including the consent scales and then several other pre-validated scales to aid in the validation of these two particular scales. So as I already sort of mentioned the phases in that picture diagram, we did a literature review and item elicitation, which helped develop the constructs that were used for the first wave, and then the item writing phase resulted initially in 78 items and 11 themes for the internal consent scale, and 67 items and 9 themes for the external consent scale. And then, as I mentioned, that went through a process of review with leading experts, which resulted in 39 items and 6 themes for the internal consent scale and 20 items and 9 themes for the external consent scale. And I'd be happy to talk more specifically about that sort of one-on-one or at the end of the talks today. And then those scales were included in the quantitative survey, which was administered to roughly 700 college students. And so there were several ways that reliability and validity were assessed. Utilizing a item elicitation that came from participant-driven data helped to support content validity, and then also examining construct validity by comparing the two measures, the internal and external consent scales, with other pre-validated measures helped establish construct validity. So I used exploratory factor analysis using a very max rotation and initially looked at eigenvalues in the scree plot to assess initial factors, and that resulted in 6 factors apiece for each scale. That didn't seem to be the best conceptual solution, so I ended up fixing the factors to 5 factors, and that seemed to be a better conceptual fit with the data. I used criteria that items needed to load initially at 0.5 or higher in order to be retained. I had 3 items that loaded a no factor at 0.5 or higher, and all 3 of those items were removed as it was decided amongst myself and the research team that I was working with that they weren't contributing sort of conceptually to the measures as a whole. We also examined cross-loaded items and had 11 cross-loaded items on the internal consent scale and 4 cross-loaded items on the external consent scale. I assessed sort of internal item correlation in Chrome Box Alpha to determine if those items should be removed and looked at where which factors they were cross-loaded on and what might make the most conceptual sense. And actually, these, and I apologize, but these final scale items are incorrect. The 11 cross-loaded items on the internal consent scale were removed, and that resulted in a 25-item internal consent scale with 5 factors, and 2 out of the 4 external consent scale items were removed, and that resulted in an 18-item external consent scale with 5 factors. And you can see these were some of the feelings, or these were the internal consent scale factors. So these were feelings associated with people's consent to sex. So people felt a physical response, and that included these sort of physical response feelings, what you might call like a physiological response. People also reported feeling comfort and safety in regard to their consent, feeling aroused, feeling like the consent, like the sex was consensual or wanted. And then lastly, feeling ready for sex. And you can see that these Chrome Box Alpha were all above 0.9, which was excellent. And then with the external consent scale, we also had 5 factors emerge. And you can see these different factors were nonverbal behaviors, passive behaviors, communication and initiator behaviors, sort of these borderline pressure behaviors, and no response signals. And these were sort of the 5 factors that emerged in which indicated how people communicated their consent to sex. And these actually match very closely with previous research by Hickman and Mollenhardt, which were how college students consented to sex using fictitious scenarios. So these factors match quite closely with what they found and all demonstrated good reliability. So I also assessed validity using known group validation, and just as an example, I was looking at what we might think might make sense conceptually based on what we know about consent based on gender and relationship status. And just in the sake of time, I'll pull out an example here, which would be something like the borderline pressure factor, which was how people communicated consent through borderline pressure. There was a gender difference. Similarly, with the no response signal, there was a gender difference. With borderline pressure, men were more likely to communicate consent in that way, and the no response signal, women were more likely to communicate consent in that way, and that sort of matched our ideas about traditional gender sexual scripts, and so that spoke to the validity of the measure. And the rest of the factors also had known group validation that made sense conceptually based on traditional sexual scripts and previous literature discussion about relationship status. So the results from this study found that both scales demonstrated validity and reliability. We found good internal consistency and reliability. Content validity was established by having participant-driven items and expert panel to review the items. The construct validity was demonstrated through conceptual similarity to Peterson and Mollenhardt's model of consent and wantedness, which I really didn't get a chance to speak about, but would be happy to talk about that in more detail, as well as the fact that the factors closely align with previous research, the external factors closely align with previous research by Hickman and Mollenhardt. We also found some relationship, that's on this previous slide here. You can see down here previously pre-validated scales, the token resistance to sex scale and rape myth acceptance scale, which also have sort of conceptual discussions of consent within those measures, also helped to demonstrate the validity of the internal and external consent measures, as well as the known group validation. There was expected group differences in the scales based on gender and relationship status. So hopefully these findings would provide important contributions to both the field of sexuality and sexual assault prevention education. I think that it's important to think about consent outside of a sexual assault framework, even though that's primarily how I talk about it. I think that consent can be the foundation of hopefully all sexual experiences, and I think that understanding consent has important implications beyond sexual assault, although I think that primarily it could hopefully inform sexual assault prevention education a bit better, especially programs that focus on consent as the main mechanism for reduction of sexual assault. But I also think it's important to keep in mind that when we think about all the types of negotiation that go into a sexual activity, whether it be, is this you know, not sexual assault, but also, are we going to use condoms? Is this going to feel good? Should we use products like a lubricant or other types of pleasure enhancing situations? I think that consent is sort of the foundation of all of that. And so if we can figure out ways in which people are negotiating consent, both in terms of their internal feelings as well as their external communication of consent, I think that could hopefully have implications for just better overall sexual experiences and you know, lead us to a way of having a more holistic view of healthy sexuality. And so I think that, you know, beyond just sexual assault prevention education, these measures could have important utility. So with that, I don't know if there's any time for one or two questions, but I thank you for your attention and for staying with us.